You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Couple things to dive into. The Nets surprised everybody. They hired Steve Nash yesterday as their head coach. And obviously he was a great player. But this is a high wire act for your first NBA coaching job. Unlike Nash, the Nets stars Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant, they already have championships here. And they have sway here in New Jersey or in Brooklyn with the Nets. But you have to keep them happy and also help them get better. And there's the rub with coaching stars. You need gravity. You got to have their respect. And some players are great at it. Most famously, you know, Phil Jackson was great with the Bulls and Lakers. Some guys are overwhelmed by it. And the Nets had a good scrappy team before they got Kyrie and Kevin Durant. But that was under Coach Kenny Atkinson. But they let him go because he wasn't a good match for KD and Kyrie. And maybe Steve Nash's stardom and previous relationships with Durant in Golden State will be effective. He was a great player, two-time MVP, and the Nets fans have to hope that that basketball genius will translate into immediate success for a team that's built to win now and win big. I mentioned at the time, as soon as I heard that Nash was being hired, you would probably have some criticism that this is a guy who didn't hold any head coaching jobs, and there are African-Americans who didn't get these opportunities. I also said to you yesterday that Tyronn Lue was probably getting the 76ers job, which he got yesterday, that there was talk that they were looking at other candidates. But back to Steve Nash. Steve Nash got the job because Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving co-signed on this. It's about relationships. You know, we've talked about this before. Jason Kidd and the Greek Freak. If the Greek Freak leaves, then are you bringing in Jason Kidd? Or do you bring in Jason Kidd to get the Greek Freak to go if he happens to leave Milwaukee? It's about relationships here. Steve Nash got this job because of his relationship with Kevin Durant. And therefore, you have to have Kyrie co-sign on this. And you've had other coaches who haven't played. Or they played and haven't coached before. Mark Jackson, Isaiah, I think Jay Kidd, Larry Bird. There have been other coaches who have taken over those roles and they hadn't coached before. But Steve Nash is going in there and got the job because Kevin Durant said, if Kevin Durant wants Tyronn Lue, Tyronn Lue is getting the job. Plain and simple. But they kept Jacques Vaughn, which I'm glad they did, because Jacques Vaughn deserved consideration for that head coaching job with the Nets. They played well, they played hard, and didn't have any superstars. And he's going to be, I think, the highest paid assistant coach now, helping Steve Nash. And Steve Nash will lean on Jacques Vaughn. It'd be smart to do that. But that's what happened yesterday with Steve Nash getting that job. A couple of games last night. There wasn't much to see with the Clippers against the Nuggets. And this is one of those where you go to seven games, you're drained by it. Now you got a two-day turnaround. You're going to face the Clippers, and it looked that way. You're starting to see some defense now. And get ready for more defense. You may not like it, although in the Boston game, they didn't play defense on the last play, but we'll get to that coming up in a moment. But suddenly there's defense in the bubble. After the players took the two-day hiatus following a Jacob Blake shooting, the games have looked very different. Pre-hiatus, points per game combined, 227, since then 210. Shooting was 46% prior to, now 44. Three-point shooting, about the same. But here's something to keep in mind. The games have been closer. Before the hiatus, 5 of 35 games were decided by 4 points or less. Since the 2 days the leagues did not play games, the league didn't play games, 6 of the 14 games have been decided by 4 points or less. And you saw one of those last night with Boston and Toronto. Now let me get to that game, because that was one of those games where the Celtics looked like they had it in hand. And if they go up 3-0, then it's not a question of if, but when they move on to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. In fact, the Celtics, prior to yesterday's game, were the favorites, according to Vegas, to come out of the East. Now, I don't know if they've changed those odds, but these are the odds right now. The Clippers are the favorites to win the title. Then the Lakers, then the Celtics, and then the Heat. But probably going to change in the next couple of hours, I'm going to guess. If the Bucks happen to win the game, or if Miami goes up 3-0, they would probably leapfrog the Boston Celtics there. The Rockets are next on the list, then the Raptors and the Nuggets. Now the Celtics in the final play. You know, you had this brilliant Kemba Walker pass. I mean, it was one of those where you go, wow, that's what championship teams do. They make a big play right at the very end. And then Toronto draws up an out-of-bounds play. And here is Kyle Lowry, the Raptors guard.
Kyle, before we even get to that last possession, just what is going through your mind right now? You just essentially saved yourselves in this series.
One game at a time. Great, great emotional moment right there, but that's over. Now we have to focus on the next game. That's how we think about it.
Not over quite yet, because I want to ask you about it. Was that the designed play? I mean, it was perfectly executed. What'd you see from OG there?
Well, the play was for either Freddie or Pascal, but we know Boston does a great job, and they do a thing called ring it. And for me, I just was being patient. I got a 7'12" guy on me, so but I just waited, and OG, he's been shooting the lights out the last couple weeks, so I had confidence in him, and we take that win.
Moving forward, how do you build off this momentum? What's it going to take?
Just go play. Every single night, go play. I mean, play our butts off. We scrapped and clawed and fought, and, you know, we never quit. And it's a really, really good team over there. They're going to come and make adjustments, but we have to play much harder.
Jaylen Brown, who was defending the back end of that play, had this to say after the game.
It's just a miscommunication. That's really all what happened. At the end of the day, we just got to be better as a unit. Regardless of what we was in, you know, we had to guard the three-point line. So that was just a disgrace at the end of the game. That was just terrible. No way we should have lost that game. I take responsibility for that, not just that play, but, you know, a lot of the plays before. It happens. It's the NBA playoffs. Either you let them gain momentum, or you come back and be ready to play next game.
Well, that's going to say a lot about the Celtics come back that next game, and I'm really curious what this does for the Raptors, the emotional lift there, and does it start to deflate the Celtics just a little bit that you were going to go up 3-0? But you start to look at the play, and they put Taco Fall on Lowry. And I love when your ball handler, a guy who makes passes for a living, is handling the ball out of bounds. But they put a 7'6 guy on him, and Kyle Lowry had the perfect lob pass to the corner. My issue was Jaylen Brown was down on Marc Gasol. They were double-teaming Marc Gasol. And I didn't understand that, because you can't throw an alley-oop to Marc Gasol. And if you have a body in front of him, he's not going to get to the rim. So Jaylen Brown was really in no man's land. He wasn't going to help out on anything. And you have to at least acknowledge the guy over your shoulder. You have to. And he got clipped a little bit, and he almost got a piece of that ball. But OG is wide open and right there on the three-point line. And it was a perfect pass. It was a perfect look, but it did not make any sense whatsoever that Jaylen Brown was inside on Marc Gasol, and you already had a big man on him. It did not make any sense whatsoever, because Marc Gasol is not going to hurt you on an alley-oop. And plus, trying to throw that pass, an alley-oop, over Taco Fall and put it right there by the basket was going to be extremely difficult to do. Kyle Lowry threw a pass that probably clipped the top of the bubble and ended up with OG wide open. And Jaylen Brown was late just a split second, and that's the reason why. You know, that's not the way you draw it up if you're Boston, but that's the way you draw it up if you're Toronto. And give credit to Lowry. Great pass. OG hits the shot, but Jaylen Brown was late by a split second, and it cost him dearly. Yeah, Paul.
Did Kyle Lowry say he had a 7'12 guy guarding him?
Yes, he did.
Let me do the math on that. That's 8 feet,
so
right?
So I had an 8-footer on him.
7'12".
Yeah.
He also called it. He's like, I got a 7'12". He almost went a little off color there.
There was a little bit of talk yesterday. Richard Jefferson, I think he might have been on ESPN, former NBA player, said that Giannis is Scottie Pippen, basically. He needs a Michael Jordan. Now, would he have said this if the Bucks were up 2-0? And the answer is no. Now, I get it. Everybody wants to have a hot take. And then you had Jay Williams, former NBA player, on the mothership. And then he said, you know, LeBron was Scottie Pippen to Dwayne Wade in Miami. I mean, come on here. Easy here. Easy here. I think LeBron was brilliant enough to let Dwayne Wade. I think the impression was it was Dwayne Wade's team. LeBron was the star. And LeBron is a natural sharer of the ball. But now all of a sudden we're divvying up who's Pippen and who's Jordan. First of all, there's only one Pippen and one Jordan here. And to say, yeah, you got to go out and get yourself a Jordan. The Greek Freak is Pippen. It's a horrible analogy. First of all, Pippen is as decorated as anybody in the history of the game, winning championships, defensive player of the year, being all NBA. And Greek Freak hadn't won anything yet. But to say he's more like Pippen? Okay, you let me know when you get Jordan there, Richard. Because I'm really interested in that. I wouldn't hold my breath that the next Michael Jordan is somehow going to end up with the Greek Freak so he can be Scottie Pippen. Yeah,
see. Did you see that Scottie Pippen also commented on it where he was just like, whoa, 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 sort of like, hold up, but hey, Richard, so who are you when you're playing that? Like, who are you compared to?
He was the Luke Longley. He was Bill Wennington. Yeah, I hear these hot takes and I go, come on, you guys are smarter than that. Then Jay Williams coming. And LeBron says, wait, I'm preparing for the Rockets. Like, why am I involved in this stupid conversation? You know, LeBron was Pippen to Dwayne Wade's Jordan. Okay. But you're not going to find a Jordan for the Greek Freak. And if they were up 2 games to 0. Now, if you said this and they were winning, okay, I'll listen to you. They're down 2 games to 0. Now, I've said, you know, Chris Middleton can be a really good regular season player. Can he be a great regular season player? But at no point did I say, you know what, he needs himself a Michael Jordan. No, I just need somebody who is going to be great. Paul George is going to need this. He'll need to be great. Kawhi can't do it by himself. He's going to need Paul George to be great in the postseason. LeBron is not going to win the title by himself. He needs Anthony Davis to be great. James Harden, he needs to be great, but so does Russell Westbrook. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, they have to be great. One guy's not going to win it for you. As great as Kawhi is in the postseason and LeBron in the postseason, they got to have help. Kawhi was awesome last year. You know what helped? Golden State got injured and his teammates in Toronto stepped up big time. But the Greek Freak needs a Michael Jordan or he's Scottie Pippen. If he ends his career as Scottie Pippen, that's still pretty good. Because last I looked, Scottie had a few titles there to his resume and one of the 50 greatest players of all time. Yes, Paul.
Man, if I'm Scottie, only thing I respond with is a picture of me with a handful of rings, like in a sandwich in my other hand. That's it. Just post the picture.
I've yet to hear from Jordan, though. I wonder what Michael has to say about this. Hopefully nothing. Hopefully he doesn't lower himself to get involved in this.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Reggie Miller was on the call last night for Nuggets Clippers. Game one, he's doing the Bucks Heat game three tonight at 6:30 Eastern. He's got the Nuggets Clippers game two tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern, all on TNT. Obviously very busy and still has time to shoot a Wendy's commercial, Reg.
They let me out of the bubble just to shoot that Wendy's commercial. And I was in the Wendy's bubble. Now I'm back in the NBA bubble. Life is good.
What's the reaction been to your Wendy's commercial?
Well, people are wondering, why am I wearing the IU candy stripers? It's like warm-up. They're pajamas, but they look like they're the IU warm-ups that the Hoosiers wear. I'm like, well, I'm an adopted Hoosier. If there's anyone who could wear those, it would be me.
Are there more commercials?
As of now, no. Hint, hint.
All right, so take me back to the final seconds there with what happened with the Raptors and the Celtics. And I know Jaylen Brown's taken some heat. I thought it was a brilliantly called play, but what did the Celtics fail to do that created that brilliant play?
Absolutely nothing, because Jaylen Brown is doing what you're supposed to be doing with 0.5 on the clock. He was dropping because I think the first option was to look over the top to Gasol in the middle and try to get a tip in play. So he's sagging down low. Look, Lowry made an unbelievable pass, and OG Anunoby made an unbelievable shot. Look at the contest by Jaylen Brown as well, because he was in the air contesting before OG was releasing that shot. So I don't know why Jaylen Brown is taking heat, because you've got to be able to make multiple efforts defensively, and that's exactly what Jaylen Brown did. He digged down low to help on the potential lob to Gasol, and he contested an unbelievable shot by OG. So I don't think the Celtics, I mean, it hurts. I've been there. It kind of reminded me of the Larry Johnson four-point play that he made versus our Pacers in that series. We came back to win the next game, but it definitely deflates you a little bit, because the Raptors season was on life support until that shot. Now they're feeling a little bit better. They got to even up the series. But let's not forget, the Raptors have been in this position before. Just last year, they lost the first two games to Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals, and then went on to win four straight and advance to the finals. So let's not be surprised what Toronto is doing, because they've been here before.
Yeah, I criticized Jaylen Brown a little bit. I didn't think you could throw an alley-oop to Gasol. He has no lift whatsoever. I thought that Boston's big man, whoever...
Taco Fall?
No. Thies? Is that...
Daniel Theis.
Yes. So he should have been... I thought he's the one that got a little lost, because he should have just been, you know, glued to Marc Gasol. And then that would allow, because Jaylen Brown was sort of in no man's land, and then they lost track of OG, who ran the baseline and snuck behind him. It was a brilliantly run play. I just thought.
I don't think if you're Jaylen Brown and the rest of the Celtics, they probably assumed with Taco Fall guarding Lowry out of bounds and that 7'5", 7'6" frame that he has, they did not think that Lowry was going to be able to see OG Anunoby in the corner.
Yeah.
So I think that's probably why he was helping a little bit more on Gasol underneath.
Watching the Bucks and the Heat so far and what we've seen, and then all of a sudden down two games to none, now all of a sudden Richard Jefferson comes out and says the Greek Freak is Scottie Pippen. He wouldn't say this if they were up two games to none.
No, obviously not. And I think it's I don't see where he's coming from. I can't say that, because Giannis is about to be a two-time MVP, and he's arguably the best player in our game right now. I know LeBron is probably still the best player, but the guy's getting ready to win a second MVP trophy. And if he needs a Jordan, I would want to know who that person is that's better than – Giannis right now that helped him get over the hump. You know, it's a catchy catchphrase to say, you know, that he needs a Jordan because he's Pippen. But
and then you had Jay Williams, who came out and said that LeBron was Pippen.
Was D Wade's Pippen. I mean, and LeBron's like, hey, why y'all putting my name? Keep my name out of y'all's mouth. But look, there's a lot of things that Coach Bud and Milwaukee needs to do to get back in this series, because we saw the same script last year in that Toronto series. Once you can build a wall versus Giannis, keep him out of transition, keep him away from the rim, make him a jump shooter, and if all else fails, foul him and send him to the free throw line. All the flaws, all the warts start to come out in playoff basketball. You and I talk about this all the time. Yeah. People can be great during the regular season. He puts up unbelievable numbers, MVP numbers, right? You don't get a chance to game plan for someone like you do in a playoff series, where you're seeing a team constantly, and in this environment every other day. They're building a wall. They're making him a jump shooter. And if he makes threes, if he makes long twos, you shake his hand and you're going to lose the game anyways. But keep him out of transition. Keep him away from the rim and dunking. And if all else fails, foul him and live with him making free throws.
And you've got game three tonight on TNT. You had the Nuggets and the Clippers last night. When did you realize that this was going to be lopsided?
I knew that Denver would play well in the first quarter because that adrenaline and that rush coming off that game seven victory over Utah. So I knew they would still be up, but I knew they would be tired. Yeah. And the Clippers, obviously, they've only played one game in the last 8 days. They've had a chance to look at both Utah and Denver and game plan and scout and prepare. So, look, what we saw last night from the Clippers is what we have been hoping for all season. They've had injuries, people missing time in the bubble, but collectively, Doc has his team playing the best basketball that I've seen. And this is the Clippers that we envisioned. Defensively, contributions from the bench, the length. It's setting up Clippers, Lakers. I know the Lakers getting ready to start their series tonight versus Houston, but this is what people are now starting to kind of see between the two LA teams.
Jamal Murray in games 4, 5, and 6 against Utah averaged 47 a game, shot 64 from the floor. Game 7 against Utah and last night averaging 14.5 and shooting 33% from the floor.
Welcome to being a scouted player.
Yes.
Right? You know, you put up numbers like that, people are going to start popping in a tape and, you know, doing their homework. We all knew he was a good player, but he elevated himself to a great player from those numbers you just mentioned. And teams are now scouting and game planning for him. And the problem he has in this series versus the Clippers, there are so many players that can guard him with length. Pat Beverly is back. Paul George. Kawhi Leonard started the game on him and has length. So you've got the two-time defensive player of the year in Kawhi and those arms and that length. And then if he is on that high screen and roll able to beat him, he's driving into length into Zubats and Montrezl Harrell, Marcus Morris. So that's the problem that Murray is going to face when he's going against the Clippers, is all that length and all those guys that are able to guard him.
We talked about this yesterday with the call on Goran Dragic on Chris Middleton's shot. Terrible. And also terrible with the Greek Freak with his foul on Jimmy Butler. I don't know if that was a makeup call, Reg, on the Greek Freak, because I never would have called, you know, Dragic with, you know, invading the space of Middleton. Middleton is going into Goran Dragic's space. And even Doris Burke said at the time, no, you can't call that. And I don't – was that a makeup call in the Greek Freak with Jimmy Butler? Do you make that call in the first quarter?
You make it in the first quarter, but it is a makeup call.
Okay. You think that was a makeup call?
I do think it was a makeup call. Right. People don't want to say that. The league probably doesn't want to hear that. But it was a makeup call. The Dragic call – in my opinion, was terrible.
Are makeup calls good?
Well, it feeds into the narrative which we've always heard about the NBA, that, you know, the officials always say there's no such thing as makeup calls, but our eyes are seeing the two plays, because they want to say that Dragic crowded Middleton on his shot. Okay, and here's the thing. If that's the type of defense and you can't crowd guys, you can't contest, shoot, I would have averaged 45 points in today's game. If you're not going to crowd me, if you can't get under me, if you can't touch me, and I got a clear sight at the rim, for shooters like me, that's a holiday.
Yeah.
So I thought they were two bad calls. I understand. Look, what the officials have to go through in today's age of replay, and everyone's at home with a remote being able to rewind back, they never get the benefit of the doubt. So I get the call that the officials, what they have to go through. But those were two very bad calls.
Reggie's got Bucks and Heat game three tonight. That starts at 6:30 Eastern. You got the Nuggets and the Clippers game two tomorrow night at 9. Your reaction to Steve Nash getting the Nets job?
Good for him. I really do. I think he's a great basketball mind. This
surprised,
is
though?
Is it what?
Surprised? Were you surprised?
Yes, because he was on no one's radar. I mean, no one thought he wanted to coach. I knew he was an advisor, you know, with Steve Kerr and, you know, the Golden State Warriors. But no one thought that he wanted to coach. And I think this came out of left field. And, you know, I've heard Stephen A's comments and stuff like that. I think it's always great when you have Hall of Fame type talent who wants to coach the younger generation. Because Steve Nash has a lot to give and say to up-and-coming young players in today's NBA. So, you know, I'm not as upset at people saying, well, you know, Mark or Ty Lue or Jason Kidd or Adrian Griffin, these guys, they'll get their shots. They'll get their calls. I think it's good to have Hall of Fame talent at the top spot, you know, leading these guys.
Yeah, he's not the first guy who stepped out of a job or stepped into a job that didn't have head coaching experience. He's not.
I was under two of them.
Yes.
Larry Legend in Indiana and Isaiah Thomas in Indiana. Both had zero experience at coaching at any level. And we were fine. I did okay. I wasn't like, why are we hiring? You know, these are Hall of Fame. I played against both of them. And so it was great for me to have a chance to learn under both Larry Legend and Isaiah.
But KD wanted this to happen. That's why it happened. So if Stephen A has a problem, then he should have a problem with KD bringing in Steve Nash or management. But this is Kyrie and KD had to co-sign on this.
And if I'm Steve Nash, I think the biggest key out of all this, well, who will be your top assistants? If I'm Steve Nash, I'm reaching out to Alvin Gentry to be my associate head coach.
But he's got Jacques Vaughn. I think it's great that they're keeping Jacques Vaughn.
I think so too. But you've got to, for your first gig out, you need someone who's had a plethora of NBA experience. Alvin Gentry, who was just let go in New Orleans and is familiar with Steve Nash from his Phoenix days, who's a lifer in the NBA. I would make him my associate head coach.
All right, so you have the Lakers against the Rockets. Is this what the Lakers wanted?
Yes, absolutely. And I think I would be surprised if this goes more than five games. I think it should be a gentleman five-game series.
Really?
Because the Lakers should beat up, because of their size, the smaller Houston Rockets. The way the Houston finished that series versus OKC, I was very disappointed. I know they got by, I think, James Harden and Russell Westbrook. They look tired. They have not had a lot of time to rest coming into game one tonight. It could be very much the same thing we saw last night between Denver and the Clippers.
Yeah,
in
but
game
Reg,
one.
We say this about James Harden every single playoff.
I know. You're right, but I just think it was a perfect setup. I would have been more worried if the Lakers would have faced OKC versus Houston. And that's odd to say when you've got two guys that are former MVPs just because of the way Chris Paul and those Thunder have been playing. I think this is
Are the Rockets regressing?
They are who we thought they were, you know? They're playing small ball and you're going against a giant team. And if Anthony Davis doesn't average 30 and 13 in this series, something is wrong. 30 plus and 13 plus rebounds, he's got to average. Easy.
I'm leading the charge to get rid of the three-point line for one season, because I'd love to see what the NBA would look like and play like if I took away the three-point shot.
That's never going to happen.
Oh, I know, but let's say I did it for a five-year period. Like, the big man would be a big man.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. But you would still have big men taking
long twos.
Long twos, right?
Yeah, but they lose their value.
Well,
I'm trying to bring the big man back, Reg.
Good luck with that. Those days are gone, buddy. Those days are gone of Hakeem, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Rick Smits. They're gone.
What would they be like now?
Hakeem could play in today's game. All the guys I just mentioned, because they were able to face you up and at least make, you know, 15 to 18 footers. All could face you up, but pretty much they were back to the basket players. The guys I just mentioned would still be Hall of Fame players.
What would Shaq be like today?
That, I still think he would be dominant, but he could not bully ball like he did in the 90s. I know that. He couldn't, I don't know. He would still be successful. That would be a good question. I would love to see that. He would still be dominant.
What if he was playing at his current weight?
I still take Shaq. Shaq is the biggest man on the planet, man.
No, Yao Ming is the biggest
man. Yao is the biggest. But when Shaq walks into a room, oh, my God. When Yao walks into a room, he is the room. He is the room.
Did John Thompson recruit you?
No. He recruited the other Reggie. Reggie Williams.
Oh.
I know. It was a sting to my heart. The three Reggies that draft class, Reggie Lewis, Reggie Williams, and myself. And I was the lowest of the Reggies. It went Reggie Williams, Reggie Lewis, Reggie Miller.
But Patrick Ewing almost went to UCLA.
I know.
That was his second choice.
Almost had him. But good old John Thompson. God bless his soul. Great man.
I was watching Iverson play against Connecticut and Ray Allen the other day, 1996, I think.
Wasn't that a great matchup?
God, well, Iverson dominated, man. And he was so good on defense. Like, he had six steals in the first half. Like, Iverson is still, he's one of those transfixing, I appreciate Jordan and those players. There's certain guys that come along and you go, there's just nobody who's been like them or since. And Iverson is one of those guys.
Pound for pound, right? You know, we talk about that in boxing.
Yeah.
Pound for pound, one of the toughest guys for his size. And to me, Jordan is a cultural icon. I think you've got to put Allen Iverson in the same category because he changed the landscape of things.
And the look and the feel, the tats, the cornrows, you know, just everything about him. I think the three guys you look at, you got Jordan, obviously, Steph Curry changed the NBA, and Allen Iverson. Those are probably the three guys I would look at in the modern era. I mean, you could do Bird and Magic. They helped, but singularly, I think Jordan, Iverson, and you know, the way Steph Curry plays basketball.
Well, he made the three-point ball fashionable. And every team now is patterning their game after Golden State, but more importantly, Steph Curry.
Great to talk to you, and we'll be watching tonight. It's Bucks Heat Game 3, 6:30 Eastern, and then Game 2 tomorrow night with the Nuggets and the Clippers. Thank you, Reg. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate it, Theodore. I'm sending Wendy's breakfast all to you guys there. Whoa. You guys are all getting Wendy's breakfast. They're sending them right as we speak.
We got to get the Danettes in your next Wendy's commercial.
We all should be in the bubble together.
Yeah,
we're
great.
Family.
Great, yeah. Yeah, instead of you bringing your family, and you're going to bring in the Danettes.
You are my family.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Bunk beds for everybody. Thank you, Reg.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
All right, McLovin came up with some concoction. It's called NFL Storyline Draft, presented by Against the Grain Productions, trademark.
Yes.
So how's this work, though?
Okay, so we're going to go around the room. We're going to go counterclockwise. Todd has the first pick. Mm-hmm. I have the second pick, and so on. We're going to decide what is the top storyline of the NFL season. Mm-hmm. So, like, ranking the top 12 storylines, basically.
Okay.
So I'm going to start with, on the clock, Todd Fritz. Do we need music, Seton? I think we need something.
Usually does.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, I know it's a boring pick, but I got to go Tom Brady and the Bucks being the number one.
If it's a boring pick, then why would you pick that the best exciting storyline of the year?
That's the one I feel like that's the storyline of the draft based on these 12 choices. that is the number one.
Oh, McLovin came up with a chalkboard here.
Yeah, I forgot to mention, I have a physical board. And here's the thing, you are not allowed to go off my board, because I know you want to.
Okay.
That is what I'm afraid of.
Okay.
So if you are watching on Peacock, you could see my board.
Okay, so who's next?
Todd went Tom Brady. I'll go second.
All right.
I am going to go Dallas Cowboys. Dak Prescott playing on a franchise tag. Mike McCarthy, new coach.
All right.
That goes to Seton O'Connor, number three.
And so by picking this, what exactly do I get? I own the storyline, or I'm just saying it's the one I'm most interested in. That's
yes. You don't own the storyline.
Yeah, I don't know what the game is here.
Well, you don't get anything. It's just a way to discuss what's the top storyline going in the NFL season. My arms are killing me holding up this board.
Well, but you could put down the board,
but then I won't be able to see you.
Okay. Okay. I'll take Cam Newton and the Patriots.
Good one, Paul. You're up.
I'm going. A little deeper, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. If the Packers slip up a little bit and they don't make the playoffs, that's saucy.
Okay, that's number four. Dan, you're up with the number five pick, top storylines of the NFL season. By the way, on the big board, I should tell you, social justice, sitting out a game, and coronavirus are on the list. It's not just players.
All right. I'm going to go race for the number one pick.
My next pick.
Now, who do you got in there? Is that just the Jags, Panthers, yeah. Redskins?
Well, I think it's fascinating if you have a team that may have a quarterback and that they end up with the number one pick. But it appears as if Jacksonville's trading. Didn't they just trade their starting safety?
Yeah.
Or they just shipped him out. So feels like they're all in.
You have two picks, Dan.
Oh, I have two picks.
You're the snake.
Okay. I don't want to take coronavirus because I just hope it's not a storyline. So I'm going to go Lamar Jackson's next. Hey, what he does for an encore.
Okay, I like it. Todd, you're up.
Oh, it's Paul. We're going back down. The snake draft. Okay.
I'm going to go social justice. I'd be surprised if it isn't a big topic early in September.
All right.
Seton O'Connor.
I'm going to take second-year quarterbacks. I feel like that's a real value pick because I get four players in one. That's a value pick.
Okay. Man, I'm up next. I wanted second-year quarterbacks so bad. I am going to go... this is mean. This you turned me on to, Dan. Big Ben returns for the Steelers.
Yeah. Now they're talking about maybe a contract extension for Ben. If he plays well with that defense... Steelers going to be great.
All right, Todd, you get two picks, and then we're on the last round, believe it or not, of the NFL story.
Wow, it flew by. Man, it did.
I'm going to take coronavirus in the number 10 spot of these 12, and I'm going to go, and so it's now between Drew Brees and the Saints' last chance and the rookie quarterbacks, Burrow and Tua, and I'm going to go with Drew Brees and the Saints' last chance.
All right.
Oh, wait a second. I just realized I gave us 12 options on here.
For five people.
For five people.
right on cue.
I don't know if we're going to... All right, well, we had two more choices here. What am I stuck with, Todd? I know you've been crazy.
No, it's done.
No, I think rookie quarterbacks is the only one that wasn't picked in this group.
Yeah, so that's it.
It was supposed to be three rounds, but I miscalculated because I looked at the four guys.
Who took Big Ben returns?
I did.
Oh.
So we're going to post the top 10 storylines of the NFL season.
This segment needs mini helmets. That's the word from Chat Row. We need some mini helmets.
One of the great, great moments we've had is when McLovin, it was like when you have a project and you bring it to class and you're going to try to show the class what you're doing. And he had all these little miniature helmets and they all kept falling off.
Yeah, they were actually Todd's son's helmets. And Todd's like, you can't lose that. Jordan will kill me if I lose the Cardinals helmet.
There was like little helmets all over the place. The little stickers of the sides of the helmet were coming off. They were scratched up. I couldn't find the Steelers. And it was not good.
Oh, my God.
Can I recap here?
I was in a bad place.
The top stories are Tom Brady and the Bucks, Cam Newton, Aaron Rodgers.
Well, let's go around the room. Who thinks that Tom Brady and the Buccaneers is the number one storyline? So, everybody here? Tom Brady, number one storyline? Okay. All right.
Dan, I believe number two.
Who believes the Dallas Cowboys are the second biggest storyline this year? Well, McLovin, you voted for it. Now you're apprehensive about raising your hand?
I just think it's Dak Prescott on that franchise tag is
going
to be...
You're just going for clicks.
But isn't that going to be... They have so much... They look really good. Like, I'm reading a lot of Super Bowl picks out there, and people are tempted to take the Cowboys.
Yes, Tom.
Doesn't Cam Newton and the Pats go way ahead of Dak Prescott? In my opinion.
No, because they're the Cowboys. I mean, the Cowboys garner more attention than anybody. And that's why, you know, we'll focus on every single game will be a referendum on Mike McCarthy, Dak Prescott, Jerry Jones. Every single game. Now, you're going to have that with Belichick, not as much with Cam, but you'll have it with Cam as well. Yes, he.
It seems like, I mean, they're not really on-field issues, but it feels like coronavirus and social justice are going to be possibly the two most dominant storylines all season.
They could be, but I couldn't bring myself to picking those as being... I was doing hopeful storyline.
You can do like real football storylines,
not all
of the surrounding stuff storylines.
Yes, because coronavirus will always linger. Social justice will be front and center the first month of the season. And then what happens after that? If do players take a stand and do something the first week of the season? Do they skip a game? Is there something that's going to be in play here that we don't know? It's been quiet. And I've actually reached out to a source on this and I even asked him that like two nights ago. I said, what are you hearing about the players? I didn't get anything from him. So I don't know. I think that'll be front and center the first month of the season. Corona just hangs there. And, but I think the football on the field, Brady and his success or lack thereof, will be the number one storyline from start to finish. Yes, McLovin.
I was going to ask, does it seem like the NFL is a bit of Teflon with coronavirus? Like somehow they've avoided being in the headlines for coronavirus. Is that going to change?
The season hasn't started yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to jinx it, but you know, season hasn't started yet. And the one thing I was told, wait till weeks 8 or 9, wait till teams are out of the playoff picture. How are players going to act, react? What's it going to be like when they go on the road? Like there's a lot of things that you can factor in that maybe you don't want to factor in, but we should.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Dan Patrick Show weekdays at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
He is the commissioner of the Pac-12. He's Larry Scott back on the program. Commissioner, good morning. Thanks for joining us. What has changed since the last time we spoke?
Well, we announced yesterday a groundbreaking partnership with Quidel, California-based testing company. That was the first to be approved for what people refer to as these point-of-care rapid result tests, where you basically get a result in 15 minutes. And we think this is a game changer for us because our medical advisor said this is the only way they can be confident that if we're asking student athletes to go practice in a high contact sport like football or basketball, for example, the only way we can be confident we're not encouraging the spread of the virus. That's kind of a standard of care. Our medical advisors and our presidents have felt that we should apply. You know, we're asking student athletes to participate in activity. It's not recommended by the CDC. It's not a socially distanced activity. So there's been a sense we've had, and we've been, you know, on one end of the spectrum here, that there's a moral and ethical responsibility for students to not put them in more harm's way than they'd be in otherwise. And by being able to test a student athlete every day before they go into practice or game, we can have a high degree of confidence that no one in practice or a game has the coronavirus and could spread it. So this is an important step in the path to us reconsidering resumption of play.
How soon is this test going to be available?
So we signed and announced the agreement yesterday. We're going to have all the materials sent to our schools by the end of this month. And so by the beginning of October, we're going to be able to start the testing. And we're also doing a research project for the company on how young, mostly asymptomatic, healthy student athletes, what's the impact of being able to test daily? Because, our universities do a lot of research, are working on some of these vexing challenges with COVID. And in athletics, we're going to have a big test case. And, there's a thesis that this kind of daily testing with rapid results could also be the answer to return to school for K through 12 kids, return to work, and you know, society and the economy getting back to normal. So there's another component of that too. So you know, but to answer your question, October will be in kind of full testing mode.
If the test goes well, is the Pac-12 in business playing football this fall?
I believe we will be. Whether it's in the fall or January 1st remains to be seen. You know, this isn't unfortunately our only challenge. We've got six schools currently, Dan. The four California schools, UCLA, USC, Stanford, and Cal, and two of our Oregon schools, Oregon and Oregon State, that don't currently have government approvals to have contact practice. I know the approvals have been given for pro sports, but not for college sports. So we'll need some help from the county's public health officials to bless this and say it's okay. Now, I think what we announced yesterday is going to be an important piece of that. I think the public health officials are keenly interested in what our plans and protocols are. So I'm hopeful that we will get what we need.
But as it is now, you're not going to play fall football.
No, as it is now, we had made a decision several weeks ago.
And this doesn't change that.
It could. It doesn't yet. Again, we don't have government approvals yet. Yeah. But if we get the government approvals and we can implement this testing, certainly we could. You know, basketball, it looks like the NCAA is going to change the start date of the basketball season from November 10th to probably November 25th or later. So that's probably the first decision we got to take. Can we revisit the decision not play basketball before January 1st and maybe start the season at the same date or close to when the rest of the country is? And then on a parallel path, we've got to weigh up. Does it make sense to start the football season in late November, early December? Or does it make sense to, you know, get through finals for the student athletes, get through the Christmas holidays and start in January? One of our considerations is going to be, you know, trying to move in tandem with the Big Ten if we can. It's a little unclear where they are and what they're going to do, despite me talking to their commissioner every day. But, you know, if the two of our conferences can move together, we've got pretty exciting vision of playing, you know, Big Ten, Pac-12 seasons, finishing with a Pac-12 championship, Big Ten championship, and then playing a Rose Bowl and other bowl games at the end of the season, even if it's an early spring game.
So Ohio State or Michigan or whoever in the Big Ten, Wisconsin leading this charge of maybe coming back this fall, but you're talking about trying to be in conjunction with the Big Ten in the spring or winter, spring, not fall, correct?
Yeah. Well, we've laid out that, you know, vision that it would be, there would be benefits in us moving in tandem. Obviously, we don't control that. As has been clear, each one of the conferences makes their own decisions. So, look, we've got to stay nimble and flexible. And it is a dynamic situation. I think it'll evolve over the next couple of weeks. I think there'll be more clarity on the Big Ten side. I know they're hopeful to get access to the kind of daily rapid result testing that we have, which, again, you know, real breakthrough in terms of medical community, at least in the Big Ten and Pac-12, being comfortable with a resumption of play. And if we can move together, that would be best. If we can't, we can't. We can only control what we control.
But also, if you're looking at the president's had a vote in the Big Ten, and I don't know what role the commissioner had, you know, Kevin Warren had. The same with the Pac-12. Are you going to have your presidents voting on this, or do you decide on if there's going to be fall sports, basketball, if there's going to be winter sports, spring sports? Who decides?
It works the same way in all of our leagues. The presidents ultimately decide. They're the board.
Okay.
So, you know, we're the chief executives. We're expected to do the groundwork, tee up, make a recommendation. But at the end of the day, they decide.
How much pressure is on you?
It's a tremendous amount of pressure. I mean, there's been so much anxiety and uncertainty. You know, we're responsible for a lot of people, whether it's in our conference office, at the universities, and then 7,000 student athletes. And every one of those groups has been dealing in a world of anxiety and uncertainty. You know, for our student athletes, they're the ones I'm concerned most about. I mean, being a student athlete, being able to participate in your sport is an important part of like who you are and your identity and going to school. And so it's been heart-wrenching to see these opportunities be postponed for these student athletes who are eager to play. But at the same time, they expect us as the adults in the room and their parents do. And I've spoken to their parents too on Zoom calls and others, you know, expect us to have their health and well-being in mind, not just for the season, but, you know, for the rest of their life too.
Yeah, I thought that the Pac-12 was dead. You guys are breathing, you know, some life back into this sports program. You guys were quiet, and I didn't know if that was a good thing. The Big Ten is quiet right now. And I don't know if that's a good thing, but, it feels like that when you guys are quiet, that things are happening behind the scenes there. And I think that was the case here.
Yeah, well, we've certainly been working hard at this, trying to solve for these things. You know, we've been more measured than other leagues. You know, we've let the science and data guide us. There's a lot of emotion around this too, but we've tried to block that out. And you know, on the West Coast, you know, I think our universities have athletics, I think, in a pretty healthy perspective. You know, they see it part of the broader, you know, community of our universities, and we're going to follow the health and medical guidelines and not make exceptions. So that's why we had to wait until the kind of thing we announced yesterday, which changes the game for us. Because we can look any constituency in the eye and say, we are not putting your son and daughter at risk.
But how do you explain this, though, Commissioner, that the SEC and the Big 12 and the ACC are playing through this? Same information, I'm going to guess.
It's same information. And look, there's a lot of pressure on everyone. And, you know, there's different priorities, different parts of the country. So, you know, I respect whatever decisions they're making. They're under different pressures, you know. But, you know, I think college football is a microcosm of what's going on in our country. You know, the same data and science is out there, and governors and other officials are making different decisions about mask wearing, whether bars should be open or not, whether K through 12 should be open or not. So, you know, it's not a great moment in our country in that regard, that the same science and data is being applied differently, and college football is not an exception.
Yeah, that's what I've said to as many people as possible. Why can't we get the Pac-12 commissioners and have their medical teams get together on a Zoom call just to be able to exchange ideas, Larry? This doesn't make sense. And it's, yeah. I know that there's priorities that are different in the South than they are in the West and then the Midwest. I get all of that. But, man, we can't play political games with this. We want to play games, not political games.
I agree. What I will tell you is there is an amazing collaboration between the conferences, including the medical advisors. They speak every week. So the information's being shared. You know, it's at the decision-making level. You know, you asked before, who makes the decision? It's the presidents and chancellors of universities. And if you're part of a public university, you've got a higher authority you work for too, right? Your state.
Yeah.
So just that has to be kept in mind. You know, the commissioners, our medical advisors are very, very collaborative. We've tried to move together. But when the decisions get made, you know, they're made by the leaders of our universities.
But if all goes well, Commissioner, when is the Pac-12 playing football?
Well, right now, I've got high degree of confidence we're playing in January.
Okay.
It's possible, because of this announcement, we could play sooner. So I think the significance of yesterday's announcement and having access to this testing is, you know, I can look you in the eye virtually and tell you I've got a high degree of confidence. We're playing just on a postponed basis. We're going to have a full, exciting season for our student athletes. Well, I shouldn't say full as in playing 12 games. I think it will be abbreviated like it is in other conferences. What's now also possible is we could start earlier than January, but that's going to depend on some things outside our control, like public health authorities and making the decision. Does it make sense to start at the end of the year or just wait to the beginning of the year?
How are you doing, fully recovered from coronavirus?
Thanks for asking. Yep. That was just another layer of anxiety. I went through it. My whole family got it. It's you know, spread very quickly through our household, but thankfully fully recovered several weeks ago and got my stamina back and back to working out. But yeah, there's a lot of unknowns about this. Certainly with all the members of my family, it affected everyone a little differently.
Good to visit with you. Have a good weekend and good luck with this.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you having me.
That's Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.